Hearing is conditional use number 2298 Freeman Solar LLC.
This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district, a GR general residential district, and an MR medium density residential district for a 75 megawatt solar farm to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 350.96 acres, more or less. The property is lying on the east and west sides of Calhoun Road, which is Sussex County Route 621, and South Shawnee Road, which is Route 36, approximately 1,267 feet south of Shawnee Road. The 911 address is not available, and the tax parcel IDs are District 130, Map 3, Parcel 246 and 247.00 and 247.02, and District 130, Map 6, Parcels 75.00, 76.00, 92.00, 94.00, 95.00, 96.00 and 97.00. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the applicant's site plan, a copy of the exact applicant's exhibit booklet, a copy of the staff analysis, a copy of a letter that's been received from the Sussex from the State Planning Office. We have a copy that's been received, a letter that's been received, start again, Mr. Chairman. We have a copy of a letter that's been received from DelDOT as part of the service level evaluation request. We have a copy of a letter that's been received from the Sussex County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division. And I would note that we received one letter of support, and that was received today after your paperless packets, but I believe you have a printed copy. Thank you.
All right, we thank you. The chair recognizes Mr. Hutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, members of the commission, council, and staff. For the record, my name is David Hutt, a local attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris James. This evening, I am representing the applicant, Freeman Solar LLC, the applicant for the conditional use that was just introduced by Mr. Whitehouse. With me as part of the team here this evening, when Mr. Davidson gets the image up on the screen, you'll see there's a whole list of names of people who are involved in putting together the materials that are part of the record. But with me this evening is Mark Davidson, of course, principal land planner with the Pannoni Group, who you're all familiar with, and the representative from Freeman Solar, which is a subsidiary of Brookfield Renewable US, is John Soininen. And there are other members of the family here that I from the Calhoun family that I'll get to and introduce a little more as I go through my presentation this evening. And that is the slide that I was talking about. You can see the list of people as well as their qualifications that were involved in the preparation of the materials and the various studies and reports that comprise those materials. Tonight's application deals with something that, of course, is one of life's modern necessities, which is, of course, electricity. The safe, reliable, and renewable production of electricity is a primary focus of local, state, and national government. Right here in Delaware, last year in 2021, Governor Carney signed Senate Bill 33 to raise Delaware's renewable portfolio standard to 40% by 2035. I think the simple version of that means that by 2035, 40% of Delaware's electric consumption has to come from renewable sources, and of course solar energy is a renewable source of energy. In addition to those governmental programs and mandates, of course, private businesses are also making similar significant pledges and promises to their shareholders and to their consumers as they seek to modify their environmental footprint. Also last year in 2021, Google committed to run all of its operations worldwide on carbon-free energy by 2030. And in order for those governmental agencies, businesses, and even private individuals to accomplish all of those goals with respect to renewable sources like sunlight, to convert those to energy and electricity, applications like tonight's conditional use application are necessary under the zoning code to allow for that to occur. I know this commission is familiar with these types of applications, as over the past several years, the commission has seen several of these applications for local utility level solar fields, ranging in a various number of size from 40 to approximately 90 acres. Tonight's application is for a transmission level facility on approximately 350 acres that will create a clean supply of renewable energy. And you can see the area is shown, highlighted in red on the screens around the room. And as it was introduced by Mr. Whitehouse a moment ago, the application does consist of 10 tax parcels located on both sides of Calhoun Road. And Calhoun Road sort of runs from the top to the bottom of the screen. And in a geometry teacher would not like this, but I would say it parallels Route 113, but it is not a perfectly parallel line to 113.
Well, you're a lawyer, not a mathematician.
I appreciate the indulgence.
It's more or less, you know.
Oh, man.
Ever hear that in math class?
That's an incorrect answer in math class.
2 plus 2 is not more or less than 4. It is 4.
One of the owners of those 10 parcels is here this evening. She just raised her hand, Donna Calhoun, and she lives along, and Mr. Davidson's pointing to it, she lives along 113. Other members of the family live within the solar field itself, where at the northern end, where Mr. Davidson has the cursor, the other owner, that is where he lives, Donnie Calhoun, across the street, his son lives, and there are various members of the Calhoun family that live in this area, which is likely, when you look at the tax map, it's self-evident why it is called Calhoun Road.
Yeah.
As you would expect, with all of the family that lives in this area and the name of the road, this is a property that has been farmed by the Calhoun family for multiple generations, and presently continues to be farmed. So if you drive there today, you will see agricultural use for all of the acreage that we are talking about. Looking at the slide that is on the screen presently, you can see that agricultural use of the area. The other significance of this is you can see with the white lines that are shown on the screen, sort of the breakdown of the 10 parcels that create this conglomeration of 350 acres of land. And on the right-hand side where the cursor is, you can see the developable areas split between the various sides of Calhoun Road, the list of all the various parcels. And if we look at the next slide, on the left-hand side is, of course, the Sussex County zoning map, and on the right-hand side is the county's future land use map. With respect to the county's zoning map, what's shown on the screen there are 6 different zoning classifications in this area. I'm just going to start at the top. You can see the yellow area, which is the MR area. You can see within that MR area, there is the red, which is C1, general commercial, and then on the left-hand side of Shawnee Road, is a B1 use. When you travel down on the left-hand side of Calhoun Road, that light tan color is GR, general residential. On the opposite side of Calhoun Road, where there is no coloring or shading, that is, of course, AR1. And then the 6th zoning classification is all the way down in the bottom right-hand corner. There is a dark gray area. It's hard to distinguish that between the aerial imagery that's shown there. But that is HI, 1 heavy industrial, and most of you would know that as, of course, the Fitzgerald site. When you look at the future land use map, there are, again, a number of areas, but primarily the light brown or light tan color that consumes most of the property is the county's developing area, one of the growth areas. The white or uncolored area is, of course, the county's low density area. I think it's dark blue or purple. Where Fitzgerald's is industrial. And then you can see the darker brown, which is, of course, the city of Milford boundaries itself. And speaking of the city of Milford, if we move to the next slide, you can see on the left-hand side is the zoning map, and on the right-hand side would be their future land use map. The two zoning designations that are adjacent to this property, there's a red color, which is C3 in the city of Milford, which is their highway commercial district. And then if you look at the light tan color there. That is the city's R3, which is their garden, apartment, and townhouse district. On the right-hand side is, of course, the future land use map. You can see the thick green line shows the areas that are potentially slated for future annexation or expansion of the municipal limits of the city. If we can go back a slide, the aerial imagery here demonstrates the nature and character of this area. As was referenced before, of course, much of the land in this area is agriculturally used. There are, of course, as is typical of most of rural Sussex County, in addition to the farmland, there are a number of residential uses in that area as well. Wanted to cover some of the other uses that exist, and if we start at the southern boundary, I've already mentioned one of those, but in the lower right-hand corner, this property does back up to the Fitzgerald's recycling and salvage yard. If we travel north on 113, we have some Calhoun residences, one of the members who's sitting right here, as well as her brother. Moving up, there is another additional residential houses along 113. And then as you move up even a little bit further north, that is the highway commercial areas that I referenced a moment ago in the city of Milford. And near the rear of those is a property owned by the city of Milford that has a electrical substation on it, which is, as you'll hear in a little bit, what makes this an ideal location for a solar farm. And of course, next to that is something that we see around here regularly in Sussex County, but all of Delaware. There's a Delaware Solid Waste Authority Milford Transfer Station, a relatively new agricultural looking building up there. As you continue north on 113, if you were to drive by there right now, there's an awful lot of site work going on for the Cypress Hall apartments, townhomes, and single family homes that'll be there. If we can move to a little bit to the left, along the boundary of the property, what you can see a little bit south of the zoning line is the Milford Grain Company. And that, of course, is right on Shawnee Road. And then at the northern boundary of the property would be Shawnee Road itself. The state strategies map show these properties as being within level 2 and level 3 areas on those maps. The properties are in Zone X on FEMA's maps, which, as the commission knows, means that they are not within the floodplain. There are wetlands located on the property. We can go to the next slide right there. And starting at I'll start at the upper left-hand corner. You can see the blue shading there, which shows some wetlands. Moving to about the middle of the site along 113. There is some wetlands area there, and then sort of between this property and Fitzgerald's, there is another area of wetlands. Those have been delineated, and if you look carefully at the site plans that are part of the materials, there is proposed a 25-foot setback between any of the panels and those wetlands areas. One of the things, as you know from the other applications you've seen, that are the positive features of a solar farm use is, of course, that they don't tax the infrastructure of the county or any other governmental entities at all. There are no new children being added to burden a school district. There's generally not fire support that's needed or other emergency services that are needed. And of course, similarly, you don't need water and sewer at these sites, because other than when construction occurs, the sites are very rarely visited just for routine maintenance or a checkup on the site. And any water need would be satisfied by the agricultural wells that exist on the site. Similar to that lack of taxing the infrastructure, a solar farm also does not tax the traffic system of these roads or the road network. As Mr. Whitehouse indicated when he introduced the application, DLDOT responded to the service level evaluation request. And in that response, and you don't get to see this word used often in their response from DLDOT, but according to DLDOT's memorandum of understanding with the county, the traffic impact was described as diminutive, and under that standard,
that's as close as they'll ever come.
In traffic speak, that means there'll be less than 50 vehicle trips per day. And as I just mentioned a moment ago, in reality, on most days, the number of vehicle trips will be zero in and out of this site. The proposed facility would also, and this is true of probably almost every solar farm, but this site, like those, would involve almost no grading of the site or change in the topography of the land. As this is a flat site, the contractor would look forward to coming in and just installing the solar arrays where they are. The primary area where there may be a grading change would be there has to be gravel roadways to each of the inverter stations pursuant to code. And so there may be grading that's involved with getting those roadways in to those locations where the inverters will be throughout the site. With respect to the site itself, as you can see on the screens around the room, this is the entirety of the 350 acres showing that solar array. It is proposed to be a 75 megawatt facility, and this produces 150,000 megawatt hours of energy per year. What you see on the screen there is approximately 166,500 solar panels. When these are installed, they're installed in such a manner as to withstand hurricane force winds, and that's very meaningful after the last weekend that we've just had with a nor'easter that doesn't want to leave. These would be the types of, they would be aligned in such a way so as to track the movement of the sun throughout the day as the sun, of course, moves from east to west. On the site, you can see all of the white areas that are shown. There, if you were to count them up, there are 25 inverters throughout the site. And of course, that they collect the solar energy, and Mr. Swinnan will review a little bit of that in a moment. And there is proposed a substation on the site, which would be adjacent to the one that's located on the City of Milford property, and the cursor is at that location on the screen. As you've heard in other applications, the operational life of a solar farm, the life of the panels and their usefulness is a little greater than 20 years generally. And for a company like Freeman Solar, this means that they have a lease with a property owner, in this case, the Calhoun family and their various entities. There's a long-term lease for them. As I mentioned at the outset, Freeman Solar LLC is a subsidiary of Brookfield Renewable United States, which is the oldest owner-operator and one of the larger owner-operators of renewable energy producers in the United States. They have projects that include hydroelectric projects, wind farms, and of course solar farms, as is being proposed this evening. As the operator of the site, they're responsible for all of the operations, insurance, and those types of issues that would arise, of course, with the ownership and use of any real property. This also means that they're responsible to decommission the site when those solar panels have reached the end of their useful life in this field. And that process is simply them coming in, removing the panels as well as all of the infrastructure, the wiring, and all those things. And of course, handing this farmland back to the Calhoun family to continue to use it in agricultural purposes as it has been historically. The three concerns that I think you hear most often with respect to solar farms are usually centered around what impact will it have on adjacent property values. The second one relates to, is there any sound issues that arise from the various pieces of equipment that are located on the property? And then the third is probably the visual appearance of the solar field and whether or not there is an impact from that visual appearance. With respect to the first of those issues, the impact on adjacent property values, Freeman Solar did commission a study from a nationwide firm that did a study. There's a primary study in the exhibit notebook regarding the impact of solar farms throughout various locations. And there's also a site-specific supplemental report that talks about just the impact or potential impact of the solar farm that's proposed along Calhoun Road. And if you read all, I believe it's a total of 185 pages of the report, The conclusion that's reached is that there is no consistent negative impact that has occurred to adjacent property that could be attributed to proximity to the adjacent solar farm. So after all the studies and looking at all the other places where solar farms have existed and been built, that's the conclusion that was reached in those reports. And again, that is within the project materials that you have in the project book. With respect to the sound that is generated from the various pieces of equipment, of course, as everyone knows, the sunlight doesn't generate any sound, and neither does the solar panel that is collecting the energy. But there are inverters and transformers that are situated on the site as part of that process, and there is noise that is generated by those. When you look at the image that's on the screen around the room right now, again, this was a study done by an engineering group of this specific site and the impact of sound of these pieces of equipment along Calhoun Road, and specifically the impact on the residential neighbors of this property. And each of the green dots that you see sort of in the islands, Mr. Davidson's highlighting them now, each of those green dots is one of the inverters. And then there's also the substation that is shown there in about the middle of the screen. And those were located on the screen, and then the impact of the sound that's generated from them using the manufacturer's specifications for how much sound each one of those generates. And then the circles, and I know they're not circles, my geometry's not that bad, but I'm not sure exactly what shape they are, but the lines that surround those inverters demonstrate the number of decibels, of course, and of course, as you would anticipate, the further away you get, the lower the number of decibels. And right next to the inverters themselves, there's a red line or circle that goes around each of the inverters. And that, the number of decibels right at the machine itself, right at the inverter, is 60 decibels. And to compare that to something that we're all familiar with, 60 decibels is a normal conversational tone. 60 decibels is also the air compressor that's outside your home. If it's functioning correctly, that's the amount of noise it generates. And you can see then, of course, as you get further away, and you don't have to move very far away, for the number of decibels to drop significantly. You can see the yellow line, basically the next line out from the red line. At that yellow line, the number of decibels is 45 decibels, which is approximately the sound of an interior appliance in your home or a refrigerator. So by the time you get just that short distance away, you're down to a normal household sound. And when you look at the report itself, the project was designed and the inverters were laid out so that there are no homes or residential uses that exist where the sound is more than 45.8 decibels. Of course, there's two important considerations with respect to this. The first is, and it, you know, sometimes you hate to state the obvious, but these things operate during the daytime as they're collecting the sunlight. And so that noise from the inverters is only going to exist during the daylight hours when they're actually producing the electricity or the current. The second is that while there is no local sound ordinance, of course, here in Sussex County, DLDOT and DENREC do have regulations regarding noise as it's generated by industries and businesses. And when you look at those, they separate the day into two time periods. There's the daytime, which is 7 a.m. To 10 p.m., and then nighttime, which is the balance of those times, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. And during the daytime, what their regulation says, and it deals with, for DLDOT, it deals with residential uses that are adjacent to highways, and for DENREC, it's businesses that are adjacent to residential uses. What it says is that you can't exceed 65 decibels at the residential use. And as you've just seen, these are significant, they're 20 decibels lower than that at the residential uses. So it easily complies with those requirements. The nighttime standard is that it has to be quieter than 55 decibels. And again, this is even during the day when it's operational at the residential use, it's 10 decibels lower than that requirement. The third common concern that's referenced, almost often referenced by neighbors, and in a moment, I'll be relaying some of those concerns, specific concerns in this application. But the concern is the visual impact of the solar panels themselves on neighboring properties. All of the solar panels, or all of this area within this, pursuant to the National Electric Code, would be surrounded by a 7-foot-high fence, and the Commission's familiar with that from the other projects that have been reviewed by the Commission. But to help address the concerns about the visual impacts of the solar field and with those fencing, Freeman Solar proposed and proposes to screen locations that are adjacent to residential properties. And the vegetation that they've seen, you can see in the upper right-hand corner, is a typical cross-section of those plantings. And those plantings are two things in particular, besides the obvious screening benefit. One, they are approved by DLDOT to be located close to roadways, because those plantings, of course, would be close to roadways, and you have to have DLDOT-approved vegetation for that. And the second thing is, and the font's too small, but down at the bottom, these are not tall-growing things, because obviously that would interfere with the sunlight reaching the solar panels. And I think the tallest one is around 15 feet, which is the height when a solar panel is installed, is probably the maximum height that it would reach. You can see the plantings that would be installed pursuant to that proposed cross-section. And if Mr. Davidson would go to the next screen, and then the one after that. This is actually Calhoun Road, a photograph of Calhoun Road. If the solar panels are approved, or the solar farm is approved, the plantings that are proposed are on the picture on the left-hand side where the cursor is, and that is the size of the plants and vegetation that would be planted at that time. And the picture at the very bottom of the screen is with that plant's normal 5-year growth. The computer modeled it out to 5 years of growth, and that would be its height at that time. So that's at 5 years what Calhoun Road, those sections that are adjacent to residential homes, would look like. The upper right-hand picture, some of those items are flowering, so in the springtime there would be some beautification. Of course, that's not year-round, which is why there's the picture at the bottom of the screen that shows what it would look like more often than when they're flowering. And if we can go back now, Mr. Davidson, you can see the locations that are highlighted here in fluorescent green with respect to where that planting and screening would be located. And as I indicated a moment ago, that screening lines up with where there are adjacent residential uses of properties. And if we can go back one more. What you see on the screens right here, and I know that there are people here who were in attendance. The applicant sent out an invitation and invited the neighborhood to learn a little bit about this project. That meeting occurred last week. And what you saw in the project books is a little different than what you see on the screen here. So I wanted to go over those differences. And the scope of people that were invited to the meeting is a little broader than the 200-foot radius that the county puts around properties. We invited a greater number of people along the Calhoun Road neighborhood corridor. And what I wanted to go over in particular was the differences between what was shown to those individuals what is shown here tonight, and to proffer and to be very clear, given the discussion that occurred earlier this evening, that this is what's being proffered and would be acceptable as a condition to the applicant. In the upper left-hand corner of the screen, there is a line of buffering and screening that was added. If you start at Calhoun Road and go to the left, that was requested by neighbors who live immediately north of there, didn't want the view, I guess, out of their backyards and such to be those solar panels. So that line was added. That is not, again, that's not in the information in the project book, but is being proffered. And then the neighbors that live along Route 113, where Mr. Davidson has the cursor, they requested screening as well. One thing that may change, there is a jog in the line that sort of surrounds Ms. Calhoun's house. That may go straight across rather than going into her property, but along that boundary of the property or border of the property. There, that line is new, and that's an additional 2,600 linear feet of screening that was added, and that's why I indicated a moment ago the visual impact is what I think most often people discuss when they talk about solar farms, and I would say that was one of the primary topics that was discussed at that neighborhood meeting was the visual impact, and those neighbors that I just referenced requested additional screening. And again, it is proffered this evening as a condition for that. At this time, I am going to ask Mr. Swinnan from Brookfield Renewable to introduce himself to you. And in particular, I'm going to ask him if he would address two questions in particular. And then when he gets done, I'm going to make just a couple of concluding remarks. The first question I wanted him to address is, you know, how a solar project works generally, and that I don't think he needs to spend much time on because you've seen several of those applications, but more specifically how that project would work on this property in Calhoun Road and all the various components would connect and work. And the second item I'm going to ask Mr. Swinnan to address is the interconnection between this solar farm and PJM and where the project stands in that process.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is John Swinnan. I'm here representing Freeman Solar LLC, and I'm with Brookfield Renewable. To talk just a little bit high level about solar, right? Solar is pretty old technology. It's been around since the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. We're seeing a lot more of it now because it's becoming cost effective. In the 50s, the only folks who could afford it were NASA. So they were putting it on satellites and the like. And now it is really a very economically viable form of electrical generation. But the technology is very simple. So the diagram on the right, really sunlight is an energy wave. Those photons come down and hit a polysilica crystal cell, and they create an electric current. So in the lower right-hand corner, very simply, you know, middle school science project here, sunlight hits a solar panel, it creates an electric current. Direct current goes through an inverter, so direct current, DC battery, like in your car, goes through an inverter to convert it to alternating current, and then that alternating current can be used for the more typical household uses we're familiar with, like lighting a light bulb. We're doing essentially the same thing at a much higher level. So the proposed project, as David indicated, Mr. Hutt indicated, is proposed to be 75 megawatts. That 75 megawatt facility would be broken down essentially into approximately 25 circuits. So what you're seeing in the upper left here is a solar array. Each one of those arrays is generating electricity in direct current, and that would go through an inverter. That inverter is approximately 5 feet wide, 9 feet long, and about 8 feet high, and it's just a sophisticated piece of electrical equipment. It's converting the direct current into alternating current. That's then going to go into a step-up transformer and take that alternating current from a voltage of approximately 680 volts up to about 34,500 volts. That step-up transformer is then going to go through the collector system into the project substation. That project substation is then again a larger transformer. It can convert that 34,000 volts up to the transmission voltage to interconnect to the existing system at 115,000 volts. All of this equipment is then wired together with the blue lines and to what's referred to as a SCADA system, which is a supervisory control and data acquisition system. And so that's really the brains behind the system. That's wired into a remote operation center that we control, and it's connected to the grid. So all of this electricity production generation can be monitored remotely and ensure that the system is operating properly. Let's see, one more, there we go. So as Mr. Hutt touched on, you know, the reason that we're interested in this location is because of the existing infrastructure that is there. The Farmview substation is owned by or operated by DP&L, and that's what brings us here, is that we have the ability to utilize that existing infrastructure to connect and produce energy and put it into the grid for wholesale and then broader consumption. So we have submitted an application to PJM. We submitted that back in 2020 and got a queue position. We've proceeded through that interconnection process, which is a multi-step process. It's a multi-year process in the best case scenario. Generally go through three levels of study. So you start with a feasibility study. If that looks good, you go through a system impact study. If that looks good, you advance to the facility study where they actually design the specific upgrades to allow us to interconnect. And then if that all goes well, you get an interconnection agreement and you're allowed to put electricity into the wholesale system under very controlled circumstances. So we've been working through that process now for a couple of years. We got the results of the system impact study in October of last year, and or September of last year, and moved through into the facility study process. We signed an agreement to advance that study, and we're told that we would have feedback from that by May of next year. Subsequently, we have come to understand that there are some issues and constraints within PJM. They currently have a backlog across the network of about 2,000 projects, and so they are working through a queue reform process to try and weed out some of those projects. So it's a complex and candidly cumbersome process, and I'm happy to answer any questions on that. I think offering this information to explain that we are working in parallel paths here, and that ultimately this facility is probably a little bit different than what has been proposed and developed to date, because we are not connecting at a distribution system voltage. We are proposing to interconnect at transmission voltage, and as a result, that's regulated by FERC. That authority is delegated down to PJM, which is the regional transmission operator. We're working with PJM, but there are delays in the system, and so the timing of that is a little bit unknown. I think those are the issues.
In a quick summary, as the application was introduced by Mr. Whitehouse, of course, this is a conditional use. As you know, conditional uses are uses that are generally of a public or semi-public character and are essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare, but because of the nature of that use and the importance of their relationship to the comprehensive plan and possible impact not only on the neighboring properties but on a larger section of the county, require the exercise of the planning judgment on location and site plan and conditions and those types of things. And certainly a proposed renewable energy source utility like this is certainly of a public character. And as I indicated at the outset, the local, state, national, and individual businesses, as well as individuals who are looking for these renewable energy sources, of course, makes this desirable, as it's stated, and essential given the mandates that have come out on these from various governmental agencies. Of course, it also is part of the comprehensive plan, Chapter 7, which deals with utilities, specifically Goal 7.3, encourages the use of renewable energy options like solar farms. This is also why the State Planning Office likely responded to the inquiry that Mr. Whitehouse referenced that his office made, and stated that the facility will bring more renewable energy to Sussex County and it will have minimal land use and environmental impacts. Of course, this proposed solar farm accomplishes all of those things. It is a renewable source of energy, complies with all governmental requirements, and from the planning standpoint, the land use standpoint that we're here on this evening, is one of the most minimal, smallest impacts that something can be on an area, whether it's just locally right there or regionally, because you're not adding traffic to the region or traffic to the area or further taxing some other system that's in the county. In addition to that, of course, while it's benefiting the environment because it's a renewable source of energy, it has a very low impact on the environment. There are no environmental hazards associated with any of those pieces of equipment that you see on the screen that are there. There are, when the project is done, those items are all recycled. The project is disassembled and they get removed. At that point in time, the project, of course, is returned to the property itself is returned to agricultural production, having not had agricultural production on it for the last 20 to 30 years as well. Two things I did want to comment on, just in housekeeping matters. One is, in the project book, the property value impact report had a watermark on it that indicated that it was a work in progress. And if you'll allow me, I will submit the version that doesn't have that watermark that says it's not a work in progress. And the only change is that it does not have that watermark, and there is a date that is situated on the form. The other item that I will hand to Mr. Whitehouse and Mr. Robertson here in a moment is a proposed set of findings of fact and conditions. You'll see when you look at the conditions that what we attempted to do was to track the conditions of the other solar farm projects that have come before the council. And of course, one of the conditions is that landscaping requirement. I know that was a concern of the neighbors, is you say you're going to do that, but how do we, and we heard it tonight, we heard you say you're going to do that, but how do we know that? And even at that meeting, I emphasized that the assurance that they have is that if it's a condition that gets placed on the final site plan for the project, if that landscaping buffer is not installed, someone should contact the county. The county will send out the constable, and the buffer will have to be planted, or there will be other repercussions to the developer of the site. With that, I'm going to hand these to Mr. Whitehouse and Mr. Robertson, and that would conclude my presentation, and we're certainly ready to answer any questions that the commission may have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you. And we'll start with Mr. Hopkins.
You know, when I drove out there, I think it was yesterday, it looked to me like a perfect spot for something like a solar field. You have the big power lines right there, the substation. It's kind of in the backyard of the transfer station. I think I understand the request, and I don't have any other questions.
Okay, Ms. Hoy Stevenson.
I had to giggle when you said you went out further than usual to talk to people in the neighborhood, because you had to do that to get somebody whose last name wasn't Calhoun. So. That's it. Now I have no questions.
I'm sorry.
Okay. The White House?
No, for me, thank you.
Counselor?
The only question, just to the proposed conditions you submitted, does that incorporate the statements you made about the landscape buffers, the location? Because you mentioned that the exhibit book had been updated, I guess, basically, what you proffered. I just want to make sure what's in here is, without having the chance to read it yet, obviously, since it was just submitted.
Certainly. It's clear, the update was because that neighborhood meeting occurred after the project book was submitted.
Yeah, completely.
Condition E says that the applicant shall submit, as part of the final site plan, a landscape plan showing the proposed landscape design for the location of screening buffering shown on the preliminary site plan during the public hearing. Okay. So hopefully that is specific enough to nail down that it's not that slide, but what's shown on that slide that we talked about tonight would be the screening in those additional locations.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hunt, if you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 2298, Freeman Solar, LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 2298? Opposition.
You didn't see her. She raised her hand for
I'm sorry. Somebody say it again. In favor.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to come up and speak, please do.
I just want to make sure, you know, two citizen.
Yeah, you've never done that before.
My name's Donna Calhoun, owner of the Calhoun Ventures. Okay. And that's correct. We were approached by this company. And, you know, I was a believer. My father always said, it's too good to be true type thing, this concept. We were approached with farming prices and things with the land and different things. I mean, it's really hard for my brothers to make a living farming. So we decided to look at this solar project, and we worked hand in hand. And I was pretty hard nut to crack. I wouldn't, like, answer their phone all the time. And I just had a lot of questions myself. But we worked through all of that, and my biggest concern was, what are we going to do when this stuff's done in 20 years, you know? I don't want to look at solar panels and weeds and, you know, all this, hoping to be living till that point. And they said, well, put that in the contract to clean it up and everything. And I just truly believe in this project because of the way gas is going and all the prices of electric and the way we're really tearing things up in the ecological system. I think that this will really make a difference, and it's a big enough project that it's going to provide enough power for a lot of things. So I'm looking forward to it.
Right. So thank you. Anyone else like to speak in favor? Yes, sir.
My name is Tom Collins. I live at 7082 Pleasanton Drive. I don't have any problems with the system they propose. I more or less wanted to speak to commend them for standing by their word at the meeting the other week. I was one of the residents that had a concern with the buffer that was not in place in that area, and they made mention that they would look into it at the meeting. I came here to ensure that they looked into it. Seems to me they have. I don't want it to go forward unless that buffer's there. It seems to me they put it in their plan. I have no opposition.
I can pretty much tell you that it won't go forward if that buffer's not there. Okay, anyone else like to speak in favor? Is anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 2298? Operator, is there anybody standing by who would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to conditional use number 2298, Freeman Solar LLC?
At this time, there is currently no one on the line.
All right, we thank you. Commissioners, any further questions? Okay, there being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next public hearing is condition use number 2363, Laurel Wesleyan Church in care of Reverend M. Scott Kahn.
This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district to allow for an electronic message center sign to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broad Creek, 100 Sussex County, containing 7.03 acres more or less. The property is lying on the west side of Seaford Road, which is Route 13A, approximately 0.53 miles northwest of a discount land road, which is Sussex County Route 468. The 911 address is 30186 Seaford Road, Lowell, and the tax parcel ID is District 332, map 12.10, parcel 3.00. And submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the staff analysis, a copy of the plans and photos submitted from the applicant, a copy of comments received from the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division, and we have a copy of the DLDOT service level evaluation response. And I would note we have received zero comments. Thank you.
All right, we thank you. Pastor, have you been here since 5 o'clock?
I sure have.
You have the patience of Job.
Well,
time to contemplate and pray.
That's a pretty good show, though.
Oh yeah. Just first time I'd been to one of these things, and I don't know how you gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen do this on a regular basis.
Particularly me.
Yeah, you. I know you, my friend. What we are proposing is we have a current sign that's been on the property for approximately 21 years.
We'll do one thing,
yep.
because the electronic recording system doesn't recognize you, even though we do. If
okay.
You would give your name, please.
Yes, I am M. Scott Kahn, pastor at Laurel Wesleyan Church.
Great, thank you.
Very good. I The current sign that we have on our property has been there for 21 years. It's getting aged. We thought about replacing it with a similar style sign, but being everything technology has changed, we wanted to go to an LED sign to upgrade our sign on our property, making it more available for people to know what's going on at our church. It's kind of where we are. I have with me tonight Mrs. Kim Deal from Kent Signs, who is the designer of the sign. And so this is what a request is, that we get the conditional use or the variance, whatever it is, for replacing the sign.
Plug the sign.
If you could just stay for the record, just the size of it, just so we, I mean, I think that's what's shown.
What size is that?
The current, or the size that we have there, let me get my glasses on, is approximately 84 wide and 96 tall, so 8 foot.
And how large is the LED panel itself?
The LED panel that we are showing here that we were looking at is approximately 31 inches tall, and it would be the 81 inches wide.
Okay.
Yep. That is approximate, is what we would do. We have current electric at that place. It'll all be run by Wi-Fi electric or Wi-Fi to do any programming.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's see if anyone has any questions for you. We'll start with Mr. Mayers.
I don't have any, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Ms. Hoy Stevenson.
I just have one request, and that is, if you're going to be projecting messages at night, that they not be really bright white, because that is just blinding. Other than that, I don't have any.
Very good. Duly noted.
Mr. Hopkins.
Is there a possibility that you'll change the size, or have you locked that size in? Because if you think you might change it, maybe we just want to footnote that.
Yeah, we may have, it may be some adjustment in the size or maybe even the design of it, but this is the concept of what we're going for an LED sign. Okay. It certainly wouldn't be humongous.
That's
yeah.
good enough.
Yep.
I have no more questions.
All right.
I just had one, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify. It's actually a code requirement, but is the sign to have the environmental sensor that reduces the brightness based on ambient light, i.e. it's dimmer at night?
Dimming at night.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sure it did, so thank you.
And she's probably thinking about the guy who's in charge of this saying, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Counselor, anything?
No, thanks.
Mr. Whitehouse, they'll have to get a signed permit, right?
Correct.
Won't that be part of the review process for the permit to make sure that it conforms to the ordinance?
That's correct.
And it should have all the gizmos the ordinance says it'll have, so it should be fine. But I don't have any questions, Pastor. If you take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anybody left with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here who would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 2363, Laurel Wesleyan Church? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 2363? Operator, is there anybody standing by that would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to conditional use number 2363, Laurel Wesleyan Church?
At this time, there is currently no one on the line.
All right, then. Commissioners, any further questions? Okay, with that being the case, we'll close the public hearing. We thank you for your patience. We don't always know what order we're going to get things in. I sure wish we had put you first instead of last, but we just don't know. We kind of take them as they come. So we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening, see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.
Thank you.
All right.